Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. We are now just days away from the June 7th California primary. And this week, we talk about the three different stories in different regions of our state. In Southern California, the biggest story is the LA mayor's race. And we talk to the guy spending more money than anybody else in that race, Rick Caruso, who's really dominated the race. In Northern California, the biggest story on the ballot is the potential recall of San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Boudin. We talked to him about that and the larger implications of that. And a little bit later, we talk about the biggest story in Sacramento this week in terms of statewide politics. Anthony Rendon, the Speaker of the Assembly, potentially being replaced by Robert Rivas, an Assemblyman. What happened there? And what's happening next? We'll get into all of that. But let's begin with the LA mayor's race. Rick Caruso, billionaire developer, guy behind The Grove and so many other spots, came into this race with not a ton of name ID, has spent almost $30 million on commercials to get some, and he's trying to win. Most polls show he's neck and neck with Congresswoman Karen Bass, who we had on last week's show. Here's our conversation with Rick Caruso. With us on set for the very first time is Rick Caruso, candidate for L.A. mayor. Of course, the guy behind The Grove, the former president of the L.A. Police Commission. Welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thanks for having me. Good seeing you.
All right. We were with you, I think, literally on day one of this, and we asked for your opening argument then. As we now close this portion of the L.A. mayor's race, what's your final argument?
Well, my final argument is the same as my opening argument. We have a bunch of issues in this city like crime and homelessness and corruption in City Hall that need to be fixed. And I believe I have the skill set to fix them. I'm more excited than ever to do it. I'd be honored to be the mayor. I'm energized by going around this city. The one thing I would tell you is that no matter where you go in this city, the issues are the same. The concerns are the same. The worries are the same of the residents. I think we're coming together in a way that will allow some really great positive change, and I want to lead that positive change.
So let's go through each of those issues. Okay. Homelessness, we've talked about many times before. We have at least four issues on that, so check YouTube if you want more on that. But let's talk about crime, specifically the issue of guns. Of course, the country has just been horrified seeing those images of funerals out of Uvalde, Texas, those innocent lives that were lost there. And it's raised the question about what we should do about gun safety. What should we do specifically in Los Angeles when it comes to the issue of guns? Should more be done here?
Well, we certainly need to get guns off the street. And as a parent, like so many parents in Los Angeles, you can't even fathom the pain and the loss that these families are going through. So my heart goes out to them and prayers. But we have too many guns on the street. There's no question about it. And we're not enforcing all the rules that we have. But listen, what's happened in Los Angeles with rising crime, four people a day on average are getting shot. The highest numbers in recent history in Los Angeles. So crime is spiking. Violent crime is spiking. More guns are being used. We have to hold criminals responsible. We have to increase the LAPD's gun unit to go out and enforce getting guns off the street. And it needs to be done now because it's only getting worse.
We know that you've said to us in the past that you would want to keep on LAPD Chief Michael Moore as the LAPD chief. There's also the LA County Sheriff's race, which you as an LA County voter gets to vote in.
Right.
In the past, you said you hadn't made up your mind yet.
Right.
We're almost at the deadline. Have you made up your mind yet? Are you voting for the sheriff?
I have till Tuesday. I haven't made my decision yet. But what I am clear about is that we've got to get a handle on crime in this city. And it's across the city. And we need to do that soon. And I think LAPD is a great organization. It needs to have more officers. We need to have more community policing. We need to have more senior lead officers on the street. And we also need to make sure that we're treating everybody right. And the communities trust the cops.
What's the hesitance on the Sheriff Villanueva thing?
I just literally haven't focused on it.
Yeah.
I know him. I just haven't focused on everybody else who's running.
Let's talk for a moment about...
I'm sort of busy focusing on my own.
about cleaning up the city, which is something you've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Like, this past week, I went to Hollywood to see Top Gun at the TCL Chinese Theater. Beautiful theater. This is a place
it's
where
amazing.
10 million people come, Hollywood and Highland. But the area itself is kind of disgusting. Yep. Right? You've got homeless people all over the place.
Right.
There's open drug use on the street.
That's right.
And this is where people come from around the world. This is their first image of Los Angeles, and right. it's that.
Right.
So if you're in there, what specifically, step by step, do you do to change a place like that?
Well, let me just say, because I'm glad you said this, the city is dirty. It reads dirty. It feels dirty. It is dirty. And you send a signal not to be here, to visitors, to guests, to tourists, and everything. You also send a signal to people that have a criminal desire that it's okay, right? You've got to get the street cleaners out. I've said we got to hire more people to clean the streets. We've got to have clean sidewalks. I mean, it's basic stuff that our leadership has failed us, that we have a dirty city. You want it to be livable. You want to be proud of walking down the sidewalk. I walked down with 12 rabbis the other day in the Pico District. The amount of filth and waste and the smell of urine in front of all these beautiful stores, small businesses, is just wrong. And we're suffocating the ability to live in the city.
I mean, will there be a special emphasis in places like Hollywood and Highland, places like Melrose, places like LA City Hall, the steps in front of LA City Hall?
How about a special emphasis throughout the city? Every part of the city should reclaim. Every part of the city needs to be cleaned up. This is not rocket science. There's practical solutions to all of these problems. The fact that it hasn't been done on people's watch, I don't understand it, but it's going to change when I'm mayor.
You've had a lot of high-profile people endorse you. When I was with you, a Snoop Dogg zoomed in, which was kind of interesting for both of us. This week, an endorsement from Elon Musk on Twitter, which, you know, he may soon own. What did that mean for you, the world's richest man backing you?
You know what it means? The diversity of the support that I'm getting from sweet Allison Watts, who's worked in Watts for 60 years, to labor unions, to community organizers, to an Elon Musk, tells me that there is a widespread support of people saying the city needs to change and it needs a change agent, and Rick is the change agent. So I love it. I think it's fantastic, and I was surprised to wake up this morning to Elon's tweet, but I'm grateful for it, and no different than I'm grateful for Sweet Alice when you were down there with us.
Yeah, so, Elon Musk has sort of had a complicated relationship with the Democratic Party, shall we say.
Yeah.
You've kind of had an interesting relationship with the Democratic Party. 3 years ago, you were Republican. You declared as a Democrat 19 days before getting into this race officially. Why are you a Democrat?
Well, I've been clear. I've been a centrist my whole life. So I was a Republican, then I left the Republican Party. I believe that the great way to govern is down the middle. I'm tough on crime. I want to give people personal freedoms, how to live their life, social issues. You know, to me, you have to have a lot of respect for how people choose to live their lives. I'm fiscally conservative. That's a centrist. I live more comfortably if I have to pick a party in the Democratic Party. And we're heading towards an election in this country, in this state, in November that I'm worried about and I don't like a lot of what I'm hearing out of the Republican side. I wanted to plant a very clear flag that I stand with the Democrats, and I'm hoping they become more centrist so that we can bring the country together and move it forward.
I mean, because you've seen some of these ads that say Republican Rick Caruso. Oh. What do you say to people that may find it like politically opportune to become a Democrat that close to the election and you're not really a Democrat?
Well, let me say about the ads that are coming out, the attack ads. I think we should be talking about the issues and not making it personal. They're full of lies and shame on them. And I find that the desperation that's going on, you know, is that the way you want to have somebody governing your city? If all of a sudden you become so desperate that you have to turn to lies and innuendos.
Let's talk about corruption, which is something else that you've talked a lot about.
Yeah.
A lot of the corruption we've seen both in City Hall here in Los Angeles and in Anaheim as well have been on the issue of real estate deals. That's where a lot of the city corruption issues have been. Of course, you've got a giant real estate empire in Los Angeles. If you're the mayor, what steps would be put in place so that the Caruso company, even if you're personally not leading it, does not get undue influence or special treatment with you as the mayor?
Yeah, and it's a good question, and I'm going to be very careful about this. I mean, I have zero tolerance, so I'm stepping away from the company. It's going into a blind trust. Others are going to manage it. I have a great management team, and I've committed I'm doing no new projects in L.A. City while I'm mayor. So I'm doing this because I love the city. I'm not trying to get any gain out of it. I'm going to do it for a dollar a year. This is an extension of my service to the city that I've done for since I was 26 years old. There is a way to separate the two, and we know how to do it. But again, what I'm mostly concerned about is focusing on how do we get the city cleaned up. And I want to work every day very hard just for the residents of the city. That's my only interest.
Most of the recent polls show that it's coming down to you and Congresswoman Karen Bass. It seems like a big part of her argument is that the way you guys view the job itself is different. Yes. You see it more as a chief executive. She sees it more as trying to bring a lot of people together from a lot of different coalitions. Here's what she said about you.
If you come in disparaging everybody that's there, I guarantee you, you will get nothing done. Government, we live in a democracy, not an autocracy.
How do you respond to that?
I've built my whole career on bringing people together to get things done. I could have never built the projects I built unless I brought the community together, government leaders together. You need to have a chief executive with that kind of skill set at the top. What we have to stop doing is forming committees to study things. We've got the problems. We know the problems. Let's go fix the problems and have some action behind it. So, and I'm not disparaging public servants. I've served the city for a long, long time. I am frustrated with people that are in public service that get paid by taxpayer dollars to fix problems, and the problems just get worse under their watch. And I think all of us in the city of Los Angeles have frankly had enough of excuses.
Is there a realistic chance that you get to 50% on Tuesday?
I have no idea. You know, my goal when I started this was to get into the runoff.
Yeah.
And if I hit the runoff, you know, I'm very excited about that. And then we work hard towards November.
One last fun thing before we go. On this show, we do a game called Personal Issues. This is where we do fun, quick things about your favorites. But this is going to be L.A. edition.
Okay.
Because, of course, you're running for mayor of Los Angeles. So we're going to put 30 seconds up on the clock. This thing that comes to mind when you hear this. What's your favorite L.A. tourist spot?
Farmer's Market.
Okay. Favorite L.A. restaurant?
Angelini.
Favorite L.A. sports team?
Dodgers.
Favorite L.A. concert venue?
Oh, Hollywood Bowl.
And favorite L.A. date night spot?
My backyard with my wife.
I'm sure it's a nice backyard.
It's nice and romantic and quiet.
I said this to Congresswoman Bass when she was here last week, and I'll say the same thing to you. Thank you so much for your kindness and integrity towards us this entire way. Mm. It's been a joy to cover this race so far, and really appreciate you and your team being so good to us.
Well, you've been great to work with.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Rick Caruso, thank you very much. Good luck on Tuesday. More of The Issue Is after that. We go to break with Randy Newman. I Love L.A., which plays, of course, every time the Dodgers, the Lakers, and everybody else wins.
Absolutely. That was great. You're good.
Thank you very much.
You're good at what you do. You might want to stick with it.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Rick Caruso. Now to the fight for San Francisco DA. Here's some of the DA 2 years ago.
In many ways, getting here today was the easy part. What comes next is essential. We cannot do this alone.
That was Chesa Boudin on the night he won election as San Francisco's district attorney 2 years ago. This week, he's facing a recall election. Some say his progressive policies aren't working. Here are some of them. He aims for diversion whenever possible, believes jail should be a last resort. He does not believe in cash bail or gang enhancements, does not prosecute juveniles as adults, but does bring charges against police who use excessive force. Chesa Boudin, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Thanks so much for having me on. Good to be here.
Your opponents say, of course, you've heard this, that you care more about criminals than crime victims. Among them, a former deputy district attorney who used to work for you but quit the office, like Brooke Jenkins. Here's what she said.
What we felt is that he was personally intervening in a number of cases, including our own cases, which involve very serious and violent offenders, in order to garner them lenient sentences.
What's your response to Ms. Jenkins and those who left your office who say that you've got to be recalled?
Well, it's just blatant lies and dishonesty, and it's frustrating to see someone like her who's never run for office, who wasn't elected to the office, and who is so ambitious in trying to promote herself that she ignores facts and evidence and data. I mean, look, I was elected to make changes to the office. And there are folks like her who are fiercely resisting any kinds of changes. They want to go back to the failed tough on crime policies of the 1990s. And that's not going to work for San Francisco voters. It's not going to make us safer. What we've got to do is move forward. And if somebody like her thinks they can do a better job, they're welcome to run for office, to put their views and their specific policy proposals to the San Francisco voters. But that's not what they're doing. In fact, they haven't put forward a single policy proposal. They haven't put forward a single concrete idea for what they would do differently. Instead, they've spent nearly $7 million, largely Republican-funded, to attack and undermine policies that are evidence-based, that are supported by the vast majority of San Franciscans, and that will build safer, stronger communities.
There is no doubt that a lot of the money for this recall is from Republicans, but there's also no doubt that there are a lot of Democrats who are frustrated as well. Let's show some video. You've seen images like this with this feeling that maybe criminals don't fear consequences. This is what happened in a Walmart where people are inside and essentially just looting. This was in a Walgreens. And you see, when you see images like this, what goes through your mind?
Well, I'm outraged. I mean, San Franciscan businesses and San Franciscan residents should not have to put up with this kind of brazen crime in their communities, in our stores, or anywhere in our great city. So I share the frustration. I think people who are outraged, it's righteous. The challenge and the dishonesty about the recall is in suggesting that I am somehow responsible for those crimes or that the recall will do anything to make us safe or prevent them. Let's be very clear. The vast majority of crimes, like all the ones you've just shown your viewers, do not result in arrests. If we are serious about deterrence, if we are serious about having consequences, if we want people who commit crimes to know that there will be consequences for their crimes, the first step is effective policing, arrest, and investigation. No district attorney, not me, not any other district attorney in this country, can prosecute crimes like the ones you just showed if police do not make arrests. And in San Francisco, frustrating for me and for my office, when you see crimes like shoplifting or car break-ins, when they get reported to the police, they're only making arrests in about 2% of all cases. That means 98% of the time, criminals are right to believe they will not have any consequences, but it has nothing to do with me or my office. The truth is, I am prosecuting cases at a higher rate than my predecessor, and I'm leading interagency multi-jurisdictional task forces that are investigating, detecting, and dismantling massive fencing operations. We recovered more than $8 million in stolen goods from a retail ring that was moving stolen goods from retail organizations and storefronts in San Francisco, throughout the Bay Area, and across the country. We did that in my first year in office. Just weeks ago, we announced the results of a multi-year operation using GPS tracking devices in bait cars that we parked all over San Francisco so that people who broke into those cars and stole the electronics that we left in them would let us map out the flow of stolen goods. Look, if police are only arresting 1 or 2% of people who commit car break-ins, we are never going to lock up our way out of the problem. We are never going to prosecute or incarcerate our way out of that problem. We need to be smarter. We need to be proactive. And that's exactly the kind of leadership I'm showing as district attorney.
So what do you say to the law enforcement people who say because of things like Prop 47, a lot of those crimes are misdemeanors, not felonies, and because of that, maybe there aren't the arrests?
Well, first of all, Prop 47 was passed way before I was the district attorney. It's state law. It's not specific to San Francisco. Whatever your views on that law are, they have nothing to do with my recall. The second thing I would say is that even after Prop 47, the threshold for a misdemeanor to become a felony, $950 limit in California, is one of the lowest in the country. Even tough-on-crime, deep red states like Texas have a threshold that's $1,500. In other words, the notion that somehow the problem with property crime in California or in San Francisco is a result of a law that predates me by many, many years is simply ignoring the national context in the 33 states across the country with higher limits. But the third thing, and this is really important, Alex, even if that is somehow the problem, it's still a misdemeanor to steal. My office can and does prosecute misdemeanor thefts. We prosecute crimes that police bring us every day. The fact that police may think a crime should be a felony instead of a misdemeanor doesn't mean they just get to stop doing their job. Imagine if I was frustrated with how the police did their job, with their low clearance rates, for example. I said, well, police only arrest 1% of reported auto burglaries, so I'm not going to bother prosecuting the ones they bring me. Of course, I can't do that. We all have a job to do, the police, the district attorney, the courts, probation, parole. And whatever police officers think about state law that's been passed by the voters or signed into law by the governor, they have a job to do, and we depend on them to do it.
You've met a lot of people in fighting this recall. Many of them love you. Some of them don't. After this process, what have you learned? And if you're able to stay in the job, have you thought about changing any of the policies or moderating any of the policies?
You know, Alex, it's been a very steep learning curve for me. I took office in January of 2020. I'd never been a prosecutor. I'd never been elected to office before that. I'd certainly never heard of COVID-19, which shut me out of my office just 2 months after I was sworn into it. And so absolutely, I've learned a lot. We've made changes already in a wide array of areas. I believe that we have to be principled. We have to be evidence-based. And we also have to be open to learning from mistakes and recognizing that there is no perfect solution to crime and to violence. And these are challenges we see across the country. If there were some jurisdiction that had solved the problems, that had a magic wand to make crime go away, we'd follow their lead. But we're doing our best, and we're following the evidence and the research, and we're implementing policies that are grounded in San Francisco values and building long-term, vibrant, strong communities.
But is there one specific policy maybe you're thinking about changing?
Well, we have done. One of the things that we changed already and that I think we need to continue to work on is our policy with regard to parole violations. You know, when I took office, there was a longstanding policy going back about 10 years prior to my administration that district attorneys in San Francisco and actually across the state were not filing their own parole revocations. They were simply deferring to the Division of Parole to make that decision. We learned the hard way that sometimes we have to step up and take the lead. We work with parole, we have tremendous respect for our parole agents, and we also have to take responsibility for filing our own violations when we see frustrating repeat criminal behavior. When I took office, we weren't doing any of them. This year, we've now filed more parole revocations ourselves than the Division of Parole has here in San Francisco.
Lastly, whatever happens in this recall, it's being watched very closely across the state and across the country as a potential bellwether for progressive prosecutors, including in L.A. County. George Gascon may be facing his own recall election. If this thing succeeds, what do you think the message that's being sent to everyone is by voters?
Well, Alex, the first thing to note is it's not going to succeed, and I'll tell you why. It's not going to succeed because everybody who voters trust is supporting us and opposing the recall. The Democratic Party and the Libertarian Party and the Green Party all say no. The San Francisco Chronicle and the Examiner and Tsingtao Daily all say vote no on H. And our elected officials, more than a dozen retired judges, as well as the San Francisco Labor Council, the California nurses, the janitors, and the Public School Teachers Union are all urging voters to reject the recall. But the other thing that's really important to note is even the folks who are supporting the recall, even the proponents, the folks like the ones you played clips of a few moments ago, are dishonestly telling voters that they support criminal justice reform. They're calling themselves, without one shred of evidence, progressive prosecutors. And that's important when you look at this from a national perspective. This is not being framed to San Francisco voters as a race between reform and tough-on-crime policies. The folks who are accepting the Republican Party endorsement and the billionaire Republican stock donations, those folks are lying and calling themselves criminal justice reformers. And they're doing that because they know that the only way to win at the ballot in San Francisco and increasingly across this country is to support criminal justice reform. I'm the real reformer. I'm doing the job I was elected to do, and we are asking voters to vote no on H so I can finish the work you elected me to do.
Chase Aboudin, thank you so much for sharing your views. Good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you. Good to see you. Have a good day.
Our thanks to the DA. Now to the latest from Sacramento.
Other than Governor Newsom, Speaker of the Assembly Anthony Rendon is the most powerful man in California politics. Last week, Rendon canceled minutes before a planned interview with us for The Issue Is. We later find out why. Assemblyman Robert Rivas, a Democrat from Hollister, told Rendon that he had garnered enough votes in the Democratic caucus to succeed Rendon as Speaker. On Tuesday, the Democratic caucus met behind closed doors for more than 6 hours trying to figure out their future. After all of that, Speaker Rendon remained as Speaker for now. But he released this statement, quote, "I applaud Robert Rivas for securing the support of a majority of the current Democratic caucus to succeed me as the Speaker of the Assembly. But when that happens isn't entirely clear." Joining us now is Assemblyman Robert Rivas. Welcome to the show for the first time.
Alex, it's so great to meet you, and I really appreciate you having me on and appreciate all you do.
Thank you very much. So when are you going to become Speaker?
That's a great question. You know, this was always about beginning a long and steady transition, a peaceful and a collaborative transition, and nothing abrupt, you know, as it has been portrayed by some outlets. You know, the fact is that I have enough votes to be the next Speaker, as affirmed by Speaker Rendon on Tuesday night. You know, and the Speaker and I will begin meeting weekly. In fact, those meetings will begin this next week. And I look forward to working with him on a thoughtful transition in the coming weeks and months.
Are we looking at you becoming Speaker before the November elections or after the November elections, when there could be different members who might vote in a different way?
Well, I think that is something that once again, it's going to be something that Speaker Rendon and I will work towards, and very excited for what the future holds.
I think a lot of us were kind of confused about the timing, thinking that maybe you did this thinking that I have the votes to be Speaker right now. Is there something in particular that you're frustrated with Speaker Rendon, if that the majority is frustrated with? And how would a Speaker Rivas be different than Speaker Rendon when it comes to policy?
You know, I think I have tremendous praise and respect for Speaker Rendon, you know, and for how he has led our caucus. I do have to mention that, you know, there's only one leader at a time. And so, I am happy to come back to you and talk to you about my agenda as Speaker once I'm officially elected. But right now, you know, I want to be as supportive as I can to Speaker Rendon.
Fair enough. We are already getting the booking request in right now. We do want to get to know you a little bit better, though. When you ran for Assembly, you put out a pretty moving ad about your grandfather's impact on your worldview. Can you share how being the grandson of a farm worker may shape you as a Speaker?
Absolutely. Look, my grandfather, his sacrifices, they really have been my inspiration in pursuing public office. You know, my grandfather strongly believed that everyone, they deserved opportunity, that they deserved respect. And that is a value that drives my work as an elected official to this day.
Very nice. Let's end with some fun. We do a game on this show called Personal Issues, where if you put 30 seconds up on the clock, you get to know your favorites real quick. Here we go. First thing that comes to mind, let's begin with this. Favorite TV show?
Seinfeld.
Good choice. Favorite movie?
Forrest Gump.
Favorite book?
Favorite book? The Stand by Stephen King.
Favorite musical artist?
Prince.
Oh, good one. And what is your all-time favorite song?
La Bamba.
Why La Bamba?
One of my mentors is Luis Valdez, who lives a short distance from my home in San Juan Bautista. He was the producer of La Bamba. He's a close family friend, obviously, with the work he did with Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. So La Bamba is true to our culture, to my story, and it's always at the top of any playlist I have.
Our thanks to, I guess, future Speaker Robert Rivas. Next week on The Issue Is a very special edition. We're going to be at the Summit of the Americas, which is this big international conference. The president, vice president, all the top administration folk are coming to town. We will be there for coverage. Can't wait for that. In the meantime, I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to vote. See you next time.